Hey, y'all.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
This is Zach.
This is Stuart.
And this is the Back Row Super Show. This is a convention coverage episode.
It's been a while, so yeah. I definitely was quite excited to go to 221BCon.
Yeah, we were at 221BCon here in Atlanta. It's the first one of the year for us, and it's our second time going back. We covered it last year as well.
Yeah, and we were super happy for them inviting us back.
Yes, it was super fun to be back.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's April 5th through 7th at the same location, Atlanta Airport Marriott.
Yeah, which isn't what we found out is a great location since people are traveling out of states.
Yeah.
People are local here in Atlanta, about a 15-20 minute drive from like downtown. So
yeah. And there are so many people who come to this con that we spoke with, who are vendors or attendees, volunteers that are actually coming from a long way away.
Yeah.
I spoke with one woman, who was volunteering, who was flying in for, or had flown in from Canada.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, people come far and wide to volunteer, attend. So it's great that they're so close to the airport, which is like a 5-minute drive away.
Yeah.
And
it's really cool just to sort of meet all of these people and talk to them. And just their love of this con keeps on bringing them back year after year after year.
Yeah.
Where I find a lot of people start recognizing each other and it becomes like a giant family, which is really cool.
It really does.
Yeah, going our second year, we definitely recognized quite a few folks. We were able to, you know, say hey and talk about what happened last year and talk about what happened this year. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And if the name of the convention, 221BCon, does not tip you off to what this convention is about, it is generally about the Sherlock Holmes fandom.
Yeah.
Although it's not limited to that. There are a number of things which we'll go into our days there, so you guys can kind of get a sense of what it's like to actually attend the convention.
Mm-hmm.
But there's tons of programming that just us being two people were not physically able to do because there's four or five things going on at any one time.
Yeah.
there's a lot of things that are not Sherlock that are covered, but it's all stuff that's been requested by the community.
Which is awesome. And the thing is, you know, there were quite a few Sherlock panels, and that was great to sort of go into it. And it's Sherlock panels for all levels. You don't have to be, like, an advanced knowledge of Sherlock. I know, personally, I only have consumed the BBC Sherlock.
Yeah, and I've read several short stories, a couple of the novels, love BBC's Sherlock, love Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah.
so there's a lot of Sherlock-adjacent things that are not necessarily Sherlock that they go through.
Yeah, and I went to quite a few Sherlock panels, and I didn't feel excluded because they didn't, you know, when they explain things, they explained it in a very, I guess,
generalized, friendly way.
Yeah.
I guess first off, let's start off on Friday.
Yeah.
So one of the panels I attended was the After Canon Ends panel.
Yeah, so on Friday, the con started off at 5. So it was nice because it kind of gave you time to, like, get back from work, figure out if you're cosplaying, because there were quite a few cosplayers there, too.
Oh, yeah, there were Sailor Moon cosplayers there,
yeah,
just to show you some of the intersection that goes on with this convention.
Yeah, and it's really cool to see people cosplaying on Friday and on Sunday, because usually Saturday's the big day, since that's the full day, but there were people out in their costumes on Friday and Sunday, and cosplaying myself, I give big props to that.
So, yeah,
that's... it's dedication right there.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so it starts off at 5, and you ended up doing which panel?
Yeah, the After Canon Ends panel.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the general idea of the panel is that it's looking at how fans keep fandoms running for particular things. And the panelists mentioned some fandoms that they were part of, like the BBC Sherlock fandom. Mm-hmm. Firefly was a big one that everyone recognized.
I'm sure.
Lovecraft, Twin Peaks. Someone mentioned Battlestar Galactica, and it came up in the panel that that's not one that has really stood the test of time, necessarily. It was really big when it first came out, and I'm sure that there are still tons of people who are interested in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the general idea of the panel was that they were talking about the impulse that fans can have, you know, continuing their show or their particular media's consumption.
Because, I mean, you become so connected with those characters, and it always is, you know, sad when your canon ends and you want to go out and develop those characters on your own, or you can sort of see what people have developed.
Well, so one of the things that came up was the impulse to fix inconsistencies, quote unquote, where apparently Arthur Conan Doyle broke continuity in his own stories a lot. And so, you know, there's an impulse to fix that, or if people who, like, you know, H.P. Lovecraft himself was kind of a problematic person.
Yes. On more ways than one.
There's things that the fandom can do to kind of sweep that away and continue the ideas that are out there and kind of expand the community and the types of media that are out there through fan films or fan fiction, cosplay, original characters within fan fiction, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think walking away from the panel, the idea that I kind of took away or noticed was that it really works when the characters within the media property are depicted more like family, almost, I think. Because, you know, like, in any family, there's a lot of drama, but there's also a lot of love.
Of course.
So I think that's kind of why, you know, things like the Firefly fandom has always stayed as strong as it has.
Yeah, because it's family,
And so there's a lot of character to pull from, things like that.
Yeah, and it's just a really well-written, like, story, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And while you were doing that, I actually went to Con Etiquette. Now, this was a panel for first-time attendees, and I just kind of wanted to see what exactly they would have gone over, since this wasn't my first time at, you know, this con or any con, but I was just kind of curious to see what recommendation and, information they would give. It was quite interesting. There were quite a few folks there, quite a few folks who, I guess it was their first time at 221 Beacon, which is awesome. They had talked about how 500 people had pre-registered for the event, and that wasn't including the number of people walking in and purchasing tickets.
Sure.
They said that usually Saturday is their big hit, where people come in and buy tickets.
It's the full day.
It's the full day, yeah. Other than that, they just basically went over some etiquettes about, you know, taking care of yourself at a con. Small things about, like, making sure that you're eating properly, because a lot of the people...
That's a tough one to do.
It is, because people, like us, look at the actual schedule and then pick 2 to 3 things...
Yeah.
And 2 to 3 things in 1 hour to try to do.
Yeah.
And you kind of forget to, like, take care of yourself and make sure that you eat. Because if you don't eat, you start getting grumpy. And no one wants a grumpy con attendee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, you know, drink water. Things along those lines. They talked about how they had communicated with the hotel staff and sort of told them exactly what was going to happen during the convention, that people were going to be in cosplay, that people were going to be, you know, singing and dancing, and it seems like the hotel is super cool with that.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of hotel employees politely going up to people and asking what their cosplay was, like trying to, like, engage with them,
which
is nice, which is really good. It's really nice when a hotel actually takes the time out to sort of... Because there were multiple events happening at this hotel.
Yeah.
There was a women's softball team who had booked a couple of, I guess,
room blocks,
because they had a tournament nearby.
Which, and that happens a lot with conventions where if the entire hotel is not being booked, then you know, you'll have a little crossover from people who are not affiliated with the convention who may be curious and be like, why are you dressed up in costume?
Yeah, yeah. So it's always nice, this sort of, that they told the hotel, gave them a heads up.
Yeah.
And it was cool that the hotel was really cool about that and started talking to people. They also talked about the con suite, which, if you don't know what a con suite is, it's usually, most cons have this. It's a particular room up in the hotel room where you can sort of remove yourself from the hustle and bustle of the downstairs where everything's happening.
Yeah.
If you kind of need like a quiet space where you just want to chill for a little bit, this is the suite for you. They usually have like food. They occasionally have like some shows going on if you just want to like watch a show, eat
zone
some
out,
food.
Grab some food.
Exactly.
Go back to the con. Yeah.
And that's always a great thing for a con to have. I have not been to a con that hasn't had a con suite, just so people can, like, kind of tune out if they need to.
Yeah.
Because occasionally, you know, we're not all extroverts. Sometimes we need time to recharge.
Recovery time, yeah.
Yeah, recharge our social battery. And that is where the con suite is. But what also surprised me was that they had a writing suite as well. Which was really cool.
Yeah.
This is the first time that I've ever seen a con that had a writing suite, where if you had a particular concept in your head, or you had a couple of characters that you wanted to write about, this was a safe, quiet area where you could take your ideas, sit down and write, and that there were a couple people there, so you could bounce off your ideas, you could have them like proofread your stuff and give you suggestions. And I thought that was so cool. Like, I did not know about that coming into the con. They do have it in their pamphlet when you read through it. But, again, we just kind of grabbed our pamphlets, and this was our first panel.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really awesome. And, and basically it was a super free judgment zone, or judgment-free zone, where the new people were able to ask questions, like just random general questions about being at a con. Since, again, most of the people there were first-time goers. So I thought it was really cool, and I thought it was really interesting. And I'm glad that, you know, they offered that panel for newer people.
Yeah, it's seems to be a trend that's offered, and it's really good to have that for people who, like you said, it's their first time going to a convention.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it. If you're going to a convention, any convention, and this is your first time, go to the, like, 101 beginner etiquette panel.
Yeah.
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 And I think if you're starting a con, having this panel means the world to all the new people. And I was super glad that 221B had it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And I'm glad that I went sort of, because, you know, I had never gone to, like, a beginner's panel, because con has been my life. So it was kind of cool just to sort of see it through
new eyes,
yeah.
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 Well, yeah, and then, you know, another panel that I went to was the Sherlock Holmes Goes to War panel.
We actually went to that together.
Yes. Yeah.
That was 6 o'clock on Friday.
Which it was billed as a look at Sherlock Holmes during the World War II era. There were a number of films that came out.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the scheduled panelist was caught in traffic or the airport. I forget whether that was set or not. But
yeah, I think their flight was delayed or something.
Yeah, I mean that's just what we heard. That's just conjecture, but you know, one kind attendee took the reins and kind of guided a discussion about the media that was coming out around that same time period, which you don't see at a whole lot of conventions. I think at larger conventions they would more than likely just lock the door or shut the room down or whatever. But, you know, at this particular convention, there are enough people who are conversant in related topics that we could kind of discuss it. And, you know, we talked about the Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce movies that were out.
Yeah.
Which apparently, you know, started as period-driven A-level films and then kind of got moved to B-film quality and used as propaganda during the war, or as the war hit.
Yeah.
We, you know, discuss radio shows that, that pulp writers wrote for related to Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
Nigel Bruce, I think they said, actually, who played Watson in the films, was actually more the host for the radio shows. And, you know, discuss things around the media at the time, such as peculiarities of serials and writing yourself into a corner with those particular pieces of media. But... all in all, it was a great discussion that
was
still related to the topic that it was billed as.
Yeah, and I believe the gentleman who stepped up was a panelist at another panel. So he sort of had that speaking ability, and he had that knowledge, which was great. And then there was another person behind us who was talking about... apparently, they went to school for, I guess, theater? Not theater.
Yeah, like music history.
And yeah. And it was really interesting because we got onto the topic of Broadway. Well, not Broadways, but musicals.
Yeah, of the time.
Of the time, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was just a really, really fascinating discussion of media that's still Sherlock adjacent and still in the same time period as the original discussion.
Yeah, and I was really glad that we went there and that panel was still able to...
Oh, yeah, because I learned... I had no idea that there were radio shows produced,
exactly.
If I'm being honest, because, you know, I just have grown up in an era where that is less and less of a thing.
Yeah,
so it was fascinating to hear about that.
Our radio shows are now our podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. So the next one, I think we also went to this together, was the Time Out Ben, which was billed as Cosplay Horror Stories, where we had a number of panelists that all of them were cosplayers with multiple years of experience.
Yeah, like 8-9 years. It was really cool because I was really interested in this since I've been doing cosplay and stuff like that.
I am less of a cosplayer, but I was going to get information to kind of see what they would discuss and the pointers that they would come up with about this is what you need to do, this is what you don't need to do, this is probably going to happen.
Yeah, and they gave a lot of good, like, suggestions. One being try on your cosplay before you go to the con or before you go to the hotel. Just put it all on.
Yeah.
Make sure that looks okay.
Not when you first do it. Do that as well.
Yeah.
But immediately before the convention.
Yeah.
While you're packing, test runs are key.
Yeah.
Some of the other advice they gave was... you know, take pictures of yourself in different light, especially if you have makeup that you need to do. You need to do test runs for makeup.
Exactly.
Make a manifest for your costumes so that items are not left at home.
Yeah. There was this one lady who was talking about how she had left her boots because she had didn't make a checklist.
Yeah.
Another
thing that she mentioned, though, was that generally... If you're cosplaying with a group of friends who are also making their own costumes and in that same community, you can say, hey, a seam ripped.
Yeah.
Do you have a repair kit? And someone will more than likely
help
you because all of these things happen the longer you do them. These are things that come up.
Yeah, and other people have gone through these experiences.
Yeah.
So now they pack like extras just in case.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll have theirs just in case. And if something doesn't happen to their costume, one of their friends may, again, rip a seam or a button falls off or something along those lines.
Yeah. There's also a discussion of, you know, be sure to use body safe paint. We had an audience member who was
a dermatologist.
Claim to be a dermatologist. Say, if you use, and this is a pointer for the listeners, mm-hmm. If you use lotion like Eucerin or Aquaphor and then apply the body paint, it'll make it so much easier to wipe off when you want to get rid of it.
Yeah, which is a really...
which I didn't know. And she said it works even if you're, like, painting a room in your house or apartment or whatever.
Yeah.
You can do the same thing and it works similarly.
Yeah, so, like, if you get some paint on you, you can easily just, like, get it off.
Yeah.
Also, sealing the paint because, again, you're going to be going through hotels and you're going to be touching everything and you just don't want, like... blue streaks down the entire
the hallway.
Yeah, or if you hug somebody, you don't want to leave a bunch of paint on their costume.
Yeah, and one of the more interesting pieces of information that I had never thought about, not, again, being a cosplayer,
mm-hmm.
is that if you're looking for tutorials, there were two areas that they recommended to look at that I would have never thought about, but it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Is look at drag queen tutorials.
Yeah,
because
I've
makeup,
heard...
makeup tips, dressing tips.
Yeah, well, with drag queens, it's all about, like, contour. It's because their makeup is more theater makeup, stage performance makeup, where,
which
you're making...
differently.
Yeah, yeah, and you're making sharper edges, so you have, like, sharper, like, a jaw or cheekbones and things along those lines.
You completely change the shape of your face.
Yeah.
The other one that surprised me is look at tutorials made by either doll makers or people that restore old Barbies, say, from the 50s that have hair as a tangled mess, because as realistic as a lot of cosplaying wigs are, they're still synthetic materials and they don't react like hair. So you can listen to this and get information on how to treat your wigs, store them properly, detangle them, all of that. So that was fascinating to learn about. And if you are out there considering cosplaying, I highly recommend you look at those videos because it sounds like they would be extremely helpful.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. Another takeaway from the panel was your cosplay doesn't have to be perfect. And, like, a lot of people, especially if it's your first time cosplaying, a lot of people toil at the details where a particular seam isn't correct or...
it's not screen accurate.
Yeah. People are going to be looking at you, like, 5 to 10 feet. So there's the 10 feet rule, where if it looks good at 10 feet, it's
okay.
Somebody's not going to be invading your space and, like, looking at your costume 2 inches away from you. Because, wow, they're in your personal space.
Really in your personal space.
Yeah. And again, if it's your first time, don't toil on the details. Try to just get a general idea of what you want to do. And start off on that.
Right.
And as you progress in your, cosplaying experience, you can always come back to that costume and revamp it a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, add a little bit more detail here, add a little bit more detail there. So, again, when they're, like, the timeout bin, if you're just so frustrated on this one piece, you just put it in the bin, forget about it for a while, and then come back... at it at a later time with a renewed vigor, with, a clear head, so you can actually get back at it and make it look good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought they did a fantastic job. It was really, like, one of the highlight panels of the day for me. Again, the panelists were really well-versed at cosplaying, and it was really great to hear some of these suggestions.
Yeah. It was fantastic to hear suggestions from people who have been doing this. I think one of the panelists said going on 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is knowledgeable, experienced, firsthand information coming from these panelists.
Yeah, and I even have on my notes that the panel was really full, too.
Like, yeah, that room was packed.
Yeah. There were a lot of, interested people in that.
Yeah, yeah. So, one of the other ones was Flavortown, which this is the second year it was done.
Yeah.
We were there for the first one last year, which this is a fantastic panel. It's basically... It's an example of something that is not at all related to Sherlock. I don't think necessarily.
No. Nope.
Not at all. I don't know if Sherlock Holmes, not Sherlock Holmes, if Arthur Conan Doyle ever wrote extensively about food or not.
No.
Like, to George R. R. Martin levels of
probably writing. Not.
So this is completely unrelated. It focuses on the fandom around Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Yes. And Guy Fieri. I love that basically the panel treated it as... I got the impression of, like, yes and improv type things, where we were building the world that our Lord and Flavier, you heard me right, Flavier. Inhabits. And as a side note, I really want to play a role-playing game in this world. Because
as everybody who's just, Guy Fieri?
Yeah, like, there's so much red string conspiracy theory stuff that we came up with building out this world for why Guy Fieri is our Lord and Flavier.
Yeah, and how he has to keep on traveling, the escape. Yeah. So he has to keep on going to, like, dives. Diners and drive-ins.
Yeah.
And he repeats this cycle.
To keep flavor into the world.
Yeah. And then we also discussed about, like, what Flavortown would be.
Yeah. Yeah. I just really enjoy this panel. It's a lot of fun to go there.
It is. It's so silly. It's so... Again, it doesn't... Nobody in there is, like, really taking themselves too serious.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. One of the panelists even commented, because it was later in the evening this year, stopped and looked around and said, okay, great. Yeah, everyone in this panel is eating
at
this moment, which is accurate. And,
it was.
And in character for the panel.
It was. So
that was,
there was some steak and shake going around. Some chili cheese fries.
Chili cheese fries.
Ah.
So this is a panel where it is not rude to eat in. And it's all part of the fun. And again, not related to Sherlock at all. Still a great fandom. Still a great panel.
I think the panel was created because of a Guy Fieri fanfic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is... more adult oriented, so
of course
you may want to look that up at your own leisure.
Yeah,
or curiosity.
It might not be safe for work, so you know, take that as you will. But again, the panel was so much fun. I noticed that there were quite a few folks with their Hawaiian T-shirts, just like good old Guy Fieri.
Yep.
Though, I do want to go to that panel one day with, like, frosted tips and spiked my hair. Yeah.
Yeah. and then, you know, after that, we attended the Fandom Nerdlesque, which was a burlesque show. It was...
Oh, it was fantastic.
It was fantastic. The performers, they were there last year as well. I don't know if the same performers were there, but the troupe, Fandom Nerdlesque, was the troupe that did it last year. And... you know, it's a charity event. It's a ticketed event. You have to get your tickets at the door.
Well, man, but everything
goes to charity.
Yeah.
It's packed. It's all in good fun. And all of the performances and all of the performers were fantastic.
Yeah. Even the MCs were great. Because the MCs were Sherlock
and Mycroft.
Yeah.
So it was... there's a framing story around them. Each performance... whether it was Sherlock related or Harry Potter related or Star Wars related or even Mighty Boosh related.
Yeah.
Which
that's
that one a deep
killed
pull.
You.
And that did kill me. that is a deep pull. It is also a BBC show. Look up the Mighty Boosh.
Yeah. Or just look up
Old Greg.
Old Greg, yeah.
But the framing device for that was that Sherlock was getting, you know, messages and such from Moriarty, taunting him, and the whole show was based around that. There's a framing device between performances, which, fantastic
it
idea.
Was so good. And the performers, again, the MCs, were able to just, like, riff off each other. They had such
very
a connection with each other. They were, you know, throwing out jokes, insults. It was a lot of fun. Shade being thrown in character. Yeah, this was all in character. And it was such a great time. And it seemed like the audience also had a great time, because there was a lot of audience participation in burlesque.
The audience really feeds the interaction and the hype for the event. So it was good to see that it was, it seemed to be really successful. That room was packed. I was honestly kind of worried that we would not be able to grab a seat, but luckily we were able to.
Yeah. And again, it was a lot of fun. It seemed like everybody was having fun.
Yeah.
And I was so happy that we were able to get into that, because I was a little worried that we weren't going to be able to make it in.
Yeah. And then, after that, they obviously had to flip the room, but there were dance parties going, I think, until like 2 in the morning or 3.
God, yeah.
I did not stay for the entirety of the dance party because I'm an old person and I needed to go to sleep. The dance party sounds like, speaking with other attendees the next day and even today on Sunday while we're recording this, it seems like the DJs were really, really doing a good job of keeping people moving, keeping the room up.
Yeah.
And
it was also great because the DJs were also taking requests.
Yeah.
So you could go up to the DJ booth and take requests. And the DJ who DJed the dance party also DJed the karaoke. So
yes,
that was cool too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was
a lot of fun. I'm so happy that like these cons have these dance parties, because just the way to sort of let
kind of unwind, especially at the end of the day.
Yeah. Where, after you go to all these panels and you discuss all sorts of different things, it's nice just to kind of like dance around and jump up and down and throw your hands in the air like you just don't care. You can even do the Cabbage Patch if you're feeling it.
So I did
all the moves. Sorry. yes, Saturday.
Saturday.
Saturday. So 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock. I ended up going to the Kingdom Hearts panel.
Yeah.
I know. I'm a big fan of Kingdom Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played all the games, all 10 of the games, because there's a lot of games that are...
despite being Kingdom Hearts 3 having just been released, it is also within the Final Fantasy universe, so that means that there are multiple games that are not necessarily big entries.
trivia, did you know that none of the Final Fantasy characters show up in 3? Yeah?
That's a spoiler.
No, it was a...
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah, it's out there. You saw the cover of the game, and there was no Final Fantasy characters.
Okay.
They pretty much said,
this
the
is
creator,
just going to be its own thing.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, no, I mean, they still go to different worlds and stuff like that. I think there's some discussion between, like, Disney and Square Enix and all that jazz about Final Fantasy. But anyway, no Final Fantasy characters, which is interesting, but there's a lot of Disney. One of the things I didn't know about this, so in Kingdom Hearts 3, there is the Frozen world, where you meet Elsa, you meet Olaf, all that jazz.
Yeah.
And, in that world, Let It Go is sung in its entirety. In its 3 minutes entirety. And it gets kind of long, and you're like, okay, all right, yeah, she's singing the song, all right. Disney said it has to be in here. If you're going to use the Frozen world, you have to use this song in its entirety.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to sing it from beginning to end, which was an interesting fact that I didn't know about. And also, in that world, Elsa was going to be the villain, where she was going to be, like, one of the Heartless. But Frozen 2 was about to be released, or the trailer was about to be announced and shown off. Disney was like, no, you can't have Elsa as the villain. So it kind of gets, like, a shoehorned, a bottomless snowman that you have to fight.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. They did some trivia, and they had some giveaways, which was really cool, too.
Oh,
they had
cool.
Bought some, little swag keychains and stuff like that.
Cool.
So they did some trivia. Unfortunately, my knowledge of Kingdom Hearts isn't that great, so I did not get any of the trivia questions correct.
Gotcha.
But for like a 10 o'clock panel, it was pretty packed.
Yeah.
Which was nice. And there were a couple people actually in cosplay as Kingdom Hearts characters, like Soren and Mickey and whatnot. So that was really cool to see. And just sort of discussing about the game, talking about streaming it, because one of the panel had a Twitch and ended up streaming the entire game throughout.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so sort of having that sort of whole interaction. And she said that she 100%ed that game, which is amazing. It's a lot of hours.
It's a lot of hours to do that.
Yeah, so the next thing I went to on Saturday at 11 was Kelfic and Fluff. So this is sort of about writing fiction, fanfic, but making it more like a happier sort of fanfic. Something that's, you know, very
not driven by trauma.
Yeah, where there's not the infighting between two characters or a struggle between a character and something else. This is just sort of like finding interesting things in the mundane. So it's just writing for being happy. It's like you're happy and you want to write something happy so people can read something happy. That there's not like, you don't have to read too much into it. It's very fluffy. It's very, like, you know,
positive
and easy to get into. There's like a hopefulness, because the big thing about the panelists, what they were talking about is, you know, life can be hard sometimes, and sometimes you just want to read about some like happy-go-lucky sort of silly fanfic. And I can totally get behind that. Because I find myself more as, like, a positive person.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I'm definitely trying to look at the good in a particular situation. And it's just kind of nice to have those particular stories out there.
Yeah.
Where they're simple reads. You don't have to, like, read too much into it. You know what's going on. You know it's going to be it's going to have a happy ending. One of the panelists said that sometimes, like, especially when it's a long fanfic, she'll have to go to the very end of the story and see, like, what the resolution is to make sure that it has, like, a happy ending. Just, you know, because if you want to, like, dedicate that much time into reading something and you're looking for, like, a happy, fluffy thing, you don't want to, like, be stuck with a really terrible ending where it just leaves you feeling bad. Especially, like, you know, if you've had a bad day and you just kind of want to lighten up and this is your escape. You want to have something, you know, silly and funny and fluffy and happy. And I thought that was really cool. And, you know, it is sometimes a little hard to write that because, again, a lot of stories are conflict-driven.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting because you have to be a little bit more skilled in the craft, I guess. Where, again, you're just kind of finding interesting things in the mundane. Where, you know, like, the domestic lifestyle is a little bit more interesting. And you can spend time about two characters just kind of loving each other. And they don't have to, like, fight with each other or, and, you know, loving each other in multiple different ways. And I thought that was really cool. I thought that was, it was a really nice panel. Again, it's kind of in my wheelhouse because I do like fluffy, silly sort of stories. So it's really cool to see that people are taking the time out to produce these stories.
Yeah, well, I imagine it's an interesting writing exercise as well.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, so much writing and drama and media is, well, drama literally is based on conflict.
Yeah.
And so, it would be an interesting exercise to write something that is completely conflict
free,
drama free, yeah. kind of a slice of life, type piece that, mm-hmm. that you're writing. So I can definitely see how that's an interesting and worthwhile,
endeavor.
Literary exercise.
Yeah. 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 And, they definitely gave out some recommendations, which were really cool. And, yeah, I thought it was a really interesting panel, and I was happy that I went to it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Then after that, we went to...
Oh, yeah, we went to the Representations of Women in Modern Science Fiction panel, which intrigued me, you know, not being a woman. I was interested in hearing... How women are portrayed in modern science fiction from the panelists'
yeah,
point of view.
I was also interested in this too. Yeah,
And it was fascinating to hear, you know, disposable characters versus recurring characters.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the high points or highlights rather of the panel were, you know, Lieutenant Uhura from Star Trek, Princess Leia from Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
The Dora Milaje and Shuri from Black Panther. And then there, you know, there's a discussion of Wonder Woman and having her power lost in her sexualization in comic form,
mm-hmm.
And how refreshing it is in the movie, which this happens in the first like minute, so this isn't spoilers, but
yeah.
You know, her as a child having agency and becoming this hero because she has good upbringing in a loving environment and because she's a moral person, not because of her painful, traumatic past.
Yeah, where a lot of women get typecast into.
Yeah. Another interesting example, that because these aren't things that I necessarily notice,
mm-hmm.
but you know, in Firefly, you know, Zoe Wash having her hair tied back when they fight.
Yeah.
Or, you know, her wearing... utilitarian
boots. Yeah.
They even brought up a point that I had never thought about necessarily or noticed, I guess, rather would be a better term, but you know, women wearing flats versus heels in different movie shots.
Yeah. Didn't they bring up one scene in The Avengers where Black Widow is in heels, and then when she goes into her fight scene, she's now in flats. Because of
oh
her.
Yeah, and I mean that's a common thing. Like I think they mentioned Watchmen, that happens with Silk Spectre. Like her feet, her footwear are visible in frame, and she's yeah. wearing flat boots. And then you know with the big action superhero pose, she's wearing heels.
Yeah,
where
it's like your stunt double can't even do these moves in heels. They're not practical.
Yeah. Exactly. some of the you know, things we discussed were Buffy the Vampire Slayer, N.K. Mm-hmm. Jemisin's writing, the comic line Bitch Planet, which is fantastic if you're an older, more mature reader.
Yeah.
There are some very deep, nuanced things that they discuss in that and portray in that comic line. I love it.
Oh, so you had actually read it before.
Yes.
That was the first time.
We may do an episode later.
Yeah, that was
that.
So at this panel, that was the first time I had ever heard of that comic before.
Yeah.
And it really intrigued me, and I definitely want to. Do you
yeah.
it's do
you a,
have
yes,
it?
I do. I can lend it to you.
Yes.
It's a sci-fi comic, and it is set, it uses the women in prison trope from like 70s exploitation movies.
Yeah.
But it's telling a much deeper story than a 70s exploitation movie.
Cool.
It's
yeah,
a really cool
setting.
I definitely
think that would be a good podcast, topic.
Brought up, like I said, N.K. Jemisin's writing, mm-hmm. Her Inheritance books are awesome. Her Broken Earth. I think she's the first writer to win the Hugo Award for every entry
wow.
in her trilogy.
Wow.
For the Broken Earth, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We did discuss... internet trolls.
Yeah.
Which it was just very light discussion. It was,
which I was happy about.
They were, well, and the panelists were pointing out that, you know, these internet trolls do all these terrible things, and then they love the Alien franchise and the Terminator franchise, specifically T2, which those are strong female
women. Yeah.
characters
yeah.
in them. It was a really enjoyable panel. I really liked during the Q&A section, there was an audience member or attendee who actually asked for got recommendations for his daughters, just for age-appropriate material that he can introduce right, yeah. to them and have strong portrayals of women in science fiction, comics, movies, books.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool, too.
It was really cool, the level of interaction that this particular panel had with in meaningful interaction with the audience.
Yeah, and it was really... I mean, I thought that was awesome that the dad was asking those questions.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, trying to find media that his daughters could read or watch and sort of have these heroine...
role models.
Role models, yeah. Which is really cool. Also, I didn't know about... in Star Trek, about Martin Luther King contacting...
Martin Luther King actually... was adamant that they keep Lieutenant Uhura in. Gene Roddenberry was adamant that they keep her in. They worked around her not being featured as a regular by having her in literally every shot. Before finally the studios were just like, okay, we'll make her regular now, which is fantastic.
Which is awesome, yeah. And Martin Luther King said that was the only show that was one of the shows that he would let his children watch because it had a strong African-American female role model in it.
Yeah.
Who actually
is doing something important and critical to the show.
Which I thought was... I never knew that. I thought that was an awesome fact.
Yeah. We also went to the... panel called Thrawn, the Sherlock Holmes of Star Wars, which was fascinating.
It was super fascinating because I didn't know too much about Thrawn
as a Star Wars fan. It surface level for people who may not be Star Wars fans necessarily, Thrawn is a character within the Star Wars universe that basically he's alien, obviously. Yeah. And it was a discussion of in the books that he's in and in some of the television show that he's in Rebels and I think in Resistance.
And, and the thing is, he is like an alien because he is from the Outer Rim, which, again, if you're not a big Star Wars fan, that's like the boonies of the
unexplored space.
Yeah.
And then, so, you know, discussing and drawing parallels between... characters that act in the books and in the media as Thrawn's version of a Watson or a Lestrade.
Yeah, because Thrawn is sort of like the Sherlock because he has this very interesting, I guess, power.
It's not power, it's intellect. He basically deduces and he studies civilization's arts to
find determine out about weaknesses. Their culture, their weaknesses, their... So he has that critical thinking mentality.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. What one of the panelists brought up is Thrawn as a queer coded character.
Yeah,
because it's probably unintentional given the time period, but it was still an interesting example of a character in major media that spoke to one of the panelists. Because of the way he is portrayed and because of the draw that character has.
Yeah.
So that I found that panel really fascinating.
Me too. It was just really cool to hear about Rebels, which is a fantastic show. I'm getting ready to start it myself.
Yeah.
So I'm super happy about that. But it's also interesting as like, he's a very unique character within the Empire because he's a very capable character and he's like a character who thinks that he's doing it for the greater good because he believes in the Empire. He believes in the structure.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just a very well paced panel. Yeah. And again, we ended up talking to a couple of the panelists out there. Like, they took their time out after the panel.
Yeah, the panel, just in the hotel, discussing it further.
Yeah.
Which, again,
it shows how passionate they are.
And what I like about this convention is that you can actually meet the other panelists there and continue conversations outside of the panel room.
Yeah.
Which is because fantastic. They're passionate about that particular thing that they're paneling on.
Yeah. And, you know, they will take the time to sort of talk to you about, you know, particular questions that you had or just talk about the fandom in general.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great. And, I'm glad that we were able to talk to two of the panelists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we also went to a panel called D&D Level Zero, and it was it's a Dungeons & Dragons panel for people who had never played Dungeons & Dragons before. From now on, I'll just say D&D, because that's a mouthful.
Yeah, and if you've listened to our podcast, you know that we have played lots of
Yeah, so I went to this kind of out of the same curiosity as you going to the Con Etiquette panel on Friday, is... you know, having had extensive experience with tabletop role-playing games, I was just curious as to the information that was being discussed by the panelists and information given to the audience members, all of which was good. They, you know, discussed some of the pitfalls that you have when you're plotting your first game or playing your first character, gave them resources to use, to play the game or try it out. You know, you can always get the rules for free online directly from Wizards. It's a basic version of the rules. It's just four races, four classes, and then enough to run the game with monsters and treasure and all of that. But it is a good way to kind of dip your toe in the water, so to speak.
Yeah, and it was interesting because a lot of these D&D podcasts, like Critical Role, Adventure Zone, have sparked people's interest into D&D.
Right.
So, at the beginning of the panel, they asked, who was prompted by these podcasts to learn more about D&D? A lot of people were.
Yeah, a lot of the room raised their hand because they listened to Adventure Zone or Critical Role,
Yeah, which I was kind of amazed about because, again, I don't think about this because I was kind of raised on D&D. You know, I've been playing D&D ever since middle school, and it's interesting to see like people get into the game through these other media outlets,
or get into the fandom because it's technically a fandom.
Well, I guess it's technically a fandom.
It's interesting to see people interested in a fandom and kind of getting a first exposure with it directly. One of the things I also liked about it is at the end the panelists took the time to set up basically a matchmaking system where it was, you know, they asked members who were interested in playing but didn't have a group to raise their hands. And for the ones that are local, you know, they said, okay, there's your group. Just start talking to each other, see if you have similar interests. And you have a group. You know, you can always go to a local comic shop or look online at Adventurers Leagues, things like that, that really kind of get you within the community and get you at a table with dice to roll.
Yeah, and another great thing was they had pre-made character sheets, they had some dice to give out and some dice bags, which was really cool. So those people who, like, met up, they had character sheets, so if they wanted to start playing a game, they could play a game. I know that...
Because there's a big open activity room where they have photo ops at them. Like, there's a step and repeat or, like, a fireplace set up like it's Mrs. Hudson's parlor or the TARDIS.
Yeah.
They have
cardboard cutouts. I think they had one of Obama and Biden.
Okay. In that activity area, they also had some tables and chairs where I think some people actually went in there afterwards and started playing.
Yeah, I believe one of the people that we talked to said that she ended up going and playing the game there, which was awesome that they were, you know, playing D&D there.
Yeah.
Though they put a Sherlock Holmes spin on it, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I would have never thought Sherlock Holmes as a monk, but now that I think about it more, I think that's a good
Sherlock
fit for
Holmes
him.
Sherlock Holmes is a good fit for a monk.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. So, it's really awesome to see people taking the time to, like, connect these people to play a game. And again, you know, you can meet, like, once a month, and you can still have a lot of enjoyment out of D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really cool. After that, we ended up going to Tabletop Gaming and Fandoms. So this was kind of along the same lines as the D&D panel, where they started talking about different RPGs that the panelists played and what kind of characters they tried to create using different fandoms. Where one character, or one panelist, was creating a Pathfinder character to mimic the character D.Va from Overwatch.
Okay.
The girl who was in the mech and stuff.
Yeah.
So she ended up making, like, a cavalier character. So she was on this, ghost horse who could, like, walk on water and through walls and stuff like that. And it was really cool. And there was another another panelist who had made a bunch of characters from Octopath Traveler, which is a which is a cool thing. But yeah, we started talking about different systems and how those systems kind of, helped people make games. One panelist brought up one of my favorite systems. Unknown Armies, and how you can pretty much make any character in Unknown Armies because you really don't have skills. You create your own skills.
Yeah.
So if you have, like, a fighting skill, you can call it kick-ass, or you can call it, like, kung fu or something like that.
Yeah.
Where you can create, basically, this person created Jackie Chan in Unknown Armies.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. And again, you know, Unknown Armies really does lend itself out to making particular characters from other fandoms just because you have so much flexibility in there. We also talked about GURPS, where GURPS can pretty much be used for anything since GURPS is really crunchy. Yeah.
GURPS is an acronym for Generic Universal Role-Playing System.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can adapt it to anything because it's so crunchy and simulationist, you can kind of make whatever world you want with it.
Yeah, so you can make any sort of, like, character from any particular fandom that you want in that system. It's just, and again, this is something that the panelists had talked about, it's very rules-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably something that you don't really want to, like, get into as your first role-playing system. But, it was just kind of interesting to hear people come up with their particular characters. And, again, a lot of times, like, one person made Mal from Firefly, but they made it in the Star Wars RPG, which is interesting. So it's just kind of cool to hear, like, because with character creation, it's really, truly what you want. Whatever you want to be. And again, you know, we don't make, like, carbon copies of particular fandom characters. But a lot of times, your favorite character is going to kind of bleed into your character that you create. I know with D&D, a lot of times, I like making, like, swashbuckler characters. And Captain Jack does bleed in a little bit, especially with, like, the visual effects of putting random things in his dreadlocks and whatnot. Occasionally you'll get the duelist who's, Princess Bride.
Inigo Montoya.
Yeah, Inigo Montoya. So it's just kind of cool to hear, like, how you can make a particular character in a particular system, or just how characters that you really enjoy kind of bleed into your characters.
Yeah.
So, that was fun. After that, there was the costume showcase, which was awesome. Couple things about that. There were quite a few people who registered for that, which was a lot more people that registered for this year than the previous year, which was really cool.
Cool.
They had a professional photographer there.
Oh, okay.
Who took all of the pictures, and they were explaining this to everybody, and I just happened to overhear it. But basically, his thing was he would take your picture, he would put it in a Dropbox, And then you'd say, oh, I like this picture, I don't like that picture.
Yeah.
And he didn't put, like, any watermarks on it or anything like that, and you'd just download your pictures. And then you'd tell him, oh, delete this picture and stuff like that. And that's so awesome because, like, no one, like, downloads other people's photos or other people's photos that they don't want to, you know, have on the website or anything like that. And it's all on this honor-based system that everybody follows. And that's such a great thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they give out the photos for free. And again, the photographer doesn't have his watermark on it, so you don't have to, like, pay him or anything like that. And, you know, the photo is free for you because you're doing this for them. You know, you're participating in this costume contest.
Right.
So, just to name a few, I took a few pictures, too. There were two Elton Johns, which was hilarious.
Were they different eras?
Yeah, there were different eras. And they were singing Saturday night? Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a group of people who did the Avenger Zone. Nice. Which was really awesome. They had all the, like, matching coats, and you could tell that they took their time on it. There were the, from Good Omens, the Angel and the Devil,
Crowley and, Azrafael.
Yeah, which was awesome. There was, like, a couple of, Harley Quinns. There were some folks from Harry Potter, like Ravenclaw, there was a Mass Effect / Dragon Age, like,
OC. Oh, cool, BioWare.
Yeah, sort of thing. Like, and again, there were a lot of people who were doing OCs, which were cool, too. Like, you know, they took influences from other things. There were a bunch of Watsons, there was a bunch of Sherlock Holmes, surprise, surprise. There was a, an otter that was Sherlock Holmes. It was an otter Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I thought that was really cool. But it was just really interesting to see, like, everybody's costume, all the work that people put into their costume. They would come up, basically they would read out what their costume was and a description, and they would walk and let people take pictures. And it was really fun. It was cool to see everybody's fun costumes, and it was, you know, awesome to see a lot of the cool, like, stitch work and hard work that went into their costumes. I will say the Adventure Zone was probably my favorite one because, again, it was a group cosplay, and group cosplays are always really hard because you have to coordinate with everybody and you have to get, like, all the costumes matching correctly.
Sure.
And especially, so, the Adventure Zone is a, again, what we were talking about, a D&D podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, no, like, official, I think...
Well, there's a graphic novel.
Well, okay, there's a graphic novel. Okay. Yeah. So, I was going to say, it's kind of hard to, like, you know, you get people's fan drawings of particular characters, but you don't know what's canon and what's not canon, so...
Yeah. Although now, with a graphic novel, it's pretty easy to tell. Yeah.
Yeah, Critical Role has a graphic novel as well,
they
too.
They do.
Yeah. And I hear that they broke their Kickstarter, too.
They did. Congratulations, so. Critical Role.
Yeah. So, that was a lot of fun. And then we go to Geek Versus, which is always an awesome time. It's run by another podcast, Geek Versus. Can't hype them up enough. They're great people. Really enjoyed them. Tony was there. He recognized us from previous year. We do see him on the occasional con route.
Circuit,
yeah. he always said that, you know, 221B Con is his favorite con next to Dragon Con as well. These are his two top favorites. I think he's actually going to be at MomoCon, too.
Okay.
So, but... They always do sort of like a game show. So what happened was they split the room into two teams. So we were all sitting on the right side. Then a group of people were sitting on the left side. He had, I think, his producer there with him, whose name now escapes me for some strange reason. But he was a nice guy. But basically, So we would go up there, we'd spin this wheel, and the wheel had all sorts of different categories on it. One was 221B trivia, Sherlock Holmes trivia. There was a general trivia. There was Pictionary. There was Code Words. There was Charades. And then there was Lose a Turn and Just a Win. And, of course, we were fighting for Girl Scout cookies. So, people will kill for those Girl Scout cookies. It was awesome that they had, like, a bunch of boxes of Girl Scout cookies. So, each team would basically send up one person to spin the wheel, and depending on what land or what you got, you would have to do that particular thing. So, of course, I love doing things, so I was not the first one up there, but definitely the second one up there. And, you know, I said hey to Tony and everything. I did not cheat. Tony thought I cheated, but I did not cheat. He told me to spin the wheel, so I spinned it, but I made it just go one over, like, it clicked once, and I got Pictionary, and of course, he screwed me over on Pictionary. He gave me the word modern. So, how do you draw modern? I was like, I don't know how to draw this.
I would have drawn a line down a chalkboard.
Modern?
Modern painting.
Oh, yeah. So what I did was I ended up doing a timeline where I drew, like, a dinosaur at the end or at the beginning of the timeline. And then, like, I drew a spaceship. I probably shouldn't have drawn the spaceship at the end of the timeline. And I was, like, trying to circle the modern time. No one got it, unfortunately. But the second time I went up there, I got a Pictionary yet again. But this one was a little bit easier. I got wax, so I just drew a candle in wax. And maybe that wax was dripping on a body. Who knows? I can't draw well. But it was a lot of fun. There was a bunch of trivia. And at the end, points were added up, but points were missing. And we all won, so we all got cookies.
Yay!
Yeah, they had Do-si-dos and the Samoas, the coconut ones.
Yeah.
And it was just so much fun because it's a game show. You're interacting with people. You really get to, like, meet your teammates. And it's a good icebreaker, too. So, like, if you didn't really have anyone at the con that you knew or anything like that, I'd recommend this. Because they usually do a game show sort of panel every year.
Yeah.
And it's just a really good way to, like, meet people because you instantly become a team and you gain those, like, bonds and stuff like that. So yeah. It was a lot of fun. I met a lot of cool people there. It was a good time. And then afterwards, I had to, you know, well, I ate because, again, don't forget
Take
about
care
eating.
Of yourself.
Yeah.
Eat right.
Eat and drink. And then it was karaoke. And if you are a listener to this podcast, you know that Stuart loves karaoke. I enjoy singing and performing and doing all sorts of crazy, crazy stuff. So I had a song in mind. It's a song that I have memorized, so I don't actually need to look at the words when I sing it, which helps because I'm usually off of the stage and interacting with the audience. Which, again, I understand if, like, you know, you can look at people and be like, that person doesn't want to be touched because they're kind of, like, moving away. But that person looks like they're digging it. So, you know, you can sort of interact with them. But not, like, you know, any sort of, like, physical contact, but, like,
yeah.
You
just
know.
Get in their face with the microphone and kind of prompt
yeah,
them to
yeah,
sing
yeah,
along
yeah.
with you.
I just wanted yeah. to make that aware when I... Yeah. Anyway. So, Avril Lavigne is my, I guess...
Guilty pleasure?
Guilty pleasure, yeah, yeah.
But you're not very guilty about it.
No, I mean, I've probably talked about it for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, What the Hell? I know that song by heart. So, I got up there. I belted as loud as I could. I don't sing well. Don't sing well at all. But boy, do I sing loud. And if you sing loud enough, you're probably doing good.
I know from editing these episodes how loud you get.
So, yeah. So, there's definitely a correlation between good singing versus loud singing. So, yeah, I sang loud. I got off of the stage. I danced around. I had a little bit of choreography that I knew, so I did that. It was a lot of fun. People were getting into it. People were, like, clapping, and, you know, they definitely gave me a nice, not standing ovation or anything, but, you know.
Nice applause.
Nice applause, yeah. At the end. And then, you know, that was earlier, because I like signing up early, because my voice will usually go after a while, because I also enjoy singing with everybody else at karaoke. And that's the great thing is, again, you don't have to be good at singing because people will usually be singing along with you. Especially if you choose, like, a very well-known song. Like, a lot of people were doing, one person did I'll Make a Man Out of You from
Mulan,
yeah, which I think most people know. So it's
a generational thing, but yeah.
So it was nice just to, like, sing out with everybody, and they invited people up on the stage to sing along, and it's definitely a great experience because everybody's singing, enjoying themselves, having a great time. People were doing Lady Gaga. There were some people doing Taylor Swift, Shake It Off, and it was just, I love that kind of interaction. I love it when, especially when people who look like they're super shy get up there and just, like, open up. Because singing is kind of like opening yourself up. Because I'll tell you, I get kind of nervous before I go out on stage because, you know, you get in your head and you start thinking, oh, am I going to do well? Are people going to like this? Am I going to sing horribly? But once you get up there and once you start singing and once you start, like, moving and enjoying just the moment, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
So I can understand why people have some reservations to it, but it is a lot of fun. And I highly recommend it. I'm so glad that they have it. Really, the wait wasn't that long, and it went on till, like, 2. So I felt like everybody had the opportunity to sing. Where you get, like, a lot of these bigger cons, you'll go up to sign up for karaoke, and they'll be like, all right, it's going to be a 3-hour wait. And you're like, oh, well, crap, I don't want to wait 3 hours
just to sing,
like, a 3-minute song. So I love that they give people, they run this karaoke for so long that they give people a great opportunity to sign up and sing. And I think that's just awesome, and I really enjoy that. And again, this is one of my highlights of the con. It's just, like, interacting and talking to people because people will recognize you and be like, oh, you're that guy who sang What the Hell. I was like, yeah. it's just a lot of fun because you're like, oh, you're that person who sang that. And it's just like, yeah. And it's just that bond. And I love it. And I highly recommend it. Even if you think that you're a horrible singer, because I'm a horrible singer, you can still go up there and sing. But yeah. So I stayed up way too late. I might or might not have been drinking. Who knows? But yeah. So it was a lot of fun, and I always look forward to it. It's one of, again, the highlights, but there's so many highlights here. So yeah.
Yeah.
So that was Saturday. And then Sunday. I went to the Three Patch podcast. It's always really interesting to see how other podcasts sort of produce and create their podcasts,
mm-hmm.
especially in a
live setting.
Yeah, which is crazy. And usually their podcast is about 3 to 4 hours. So they had to condense it, yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, so they have a 3 to 4 hour podcast, but they do different segments in their podcast.
Right.
So they do, like, particular things where they do, like, a shipping thing where they ship a couple of characters and talk about it. They do a sorting thing where they, like, sort particular characters into Harry Potter houses and explain why. They do, like, a mailbag thing where they talk, or they pull comments or mail that they get and talk about that. So, it's, you know, 3 to 4 hours, but it's all a different segment, so it's very digestible. Well, they had to condense that into, like, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Where, like, each segment was about, like, 9 minutes.
Yeah.
Which was amazing to see them do that. They even had audience participation, which was crazy, because you don't know what people are going to say on these podcasts. You know. So, it's really cool just to sort of see another podcast in action. Because, you know, we listen to a bunch of podcasts, but sort of to see behind the scenes, I thought that was really cool. Yeah. And I thought that it did a great job, because they have multiple hosts for different segments. So, they were getting up, moving, and sitting back down.
Wow.
Yeah. So, it was really well coordinated. And it does look like they, I guess they have, like, bullet points for particular things that they want to talk about.
Sure.
Which, you know, is really cool, too, sort of to keep them on track. And especially when you only have, like, 9 minutes. Yeah. You really have to, like, take it down to a laser point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, so I went to the panel called Sherlock AUs Before There Were AUs, which AU means alternate universe, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Anyone listening may know that.
Yeah.
And so the discussion was largely around what makes something an AU versus an adaptation, or, you know, things like that. One of the interesting examples that one of the panelists spoke about was there's a book that came out in 1897, written by an American named John Kendrick Bangs. And I really want to read it because it was written after the Reichenbach Falls.
Oh, wow.
So it's after Sherlock Holmes' death in canon at that point. And so this guy wrote a story about Sherlock Holmes in the afterlife. And the name of this is called The Pursuit of the Houseboat, because people in the afterlife have the houseboat that they're living on stolen from the River Styx, and so he has to try it. So I kind of want to read it, because it sounds really crazy.
Wow.
There was an example, they said there were Sherlock Holmes stories about him in space in the 60s because of the space race going on.
Of course.
In Star Trek, one of Spock's ancestors is apparently listed as being Sherlock Holmes on his human side.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which, I mean, it makes sense, cool, given the logic and deductive reasoning and all
of that. Yeah, I can see that.
You know, examples of Holmes meeting Mowgli, Holmes meeting Tarzan. A couple of my own favorite stories, or both of them are actually written by Neil Gaiman. One is called A Study in Emerald, in which Sherlock Holmes crosses over with the Lovecraft mythology.
Yeah,
mythos.
I've read that one too. I thought that was really good.
And the other one is called The Case of Death and Honey. And it's not a spoiler to just give you the premise. So the premise is the story opens on Mycroft Holmes on his deathbed. As an older man, and giving Sherlock Holmes a case before Mycroft dies, saying, you know, I've plotted out what's going to happen in the next 50 years to the British Empire. It's a shame I'm not going to live longer. It's a crime that I'm dying. You should solve death. And so Gaiman does his thing.
Yep.
And it is a fascinating story. Highly recommend it. Study in Emerald by Neil Gaiman and The Case of Death and Honey also by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
And then finally, con directors have something that they have titled as Our Last Bow. And it's the final thing done at the convention with an audience, in which the directors actually sit on a panel and they get suggestions for changes to make in the future from the audience members and the attendees. People bring up any issues to be resolved for future cons, and it's very communal. Like,
yeah, I wish more cons would do this.
Yeah, well, I
think that cons would benefit greatly from having this kind of panel.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's really good to hear from the community directly immediately after it's been experienced, rather than 6 months down the road. You may go, yeah, there was an issue, but I thought of a way to fix it, but maybe it wouldn't work. But people have the opportunity to offer suggestions to make things run more smoothly or be more inclusive, mm-hmm.
And it was all like that. Constructive criticism too.
I mean, even criticism is probably too strong. It's just really, really comments on like, yeah, this convention went fantastic. Yeah. There was this one thing I had a concern about, maybe for someone else, but you know, here's a suggestion to fix it. And they were taking notes and listening to the people going to the conventions, which I think is just one of the numerous reasons that this convention is so much different from any of the others.
Yeah, this is definitely one of my favorite conventions.
It is.
I mean, and it hasn't even, like, my opinion from last year, if you want to listen to that, is this is one of my favorite conventions, and it has not changed. Second year going here, and I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I said it multiple times to people when we would speak with them, mm-hmm. To kind of get attendee, testing the waters of attendees, seeing if they're having a good time, speaking with some of the staff members and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I said it numerous times. It's 100% sincere and genuine. This is one of my... It's my favorite of the local small cons.
Yeah.
I love going. Everyone is very warm and inviting and inclusive.
Yeah.
It feels, like you said at the beginning, it feels like family.
Yeah, and some of the people that we talked to basically said that. They said it feels like family.
Yeah.
And again, you know, we talked to quite a few people, all different, you know, different types of people, older people, younger people, and they all sort of had the same opinion of, like, we really enjoy this convention. We like somebody traveled from Michigan just to be down here.
Someone traveled from Canada. Like,
yeah, it's amazing to sort of see how well this convention has taken off and how much people love this convention. And I don't know. I haven't seen another convention like that. Like, you know, with a lot of these bigger conventions, you get all of these people who are like, I don't know if I'm going to come back next year. I didn't really have that much fun. This one, it seemed like everybody was having a blast. I know I had a blast.
I had a blast. And even, you know, normally our episodes are like 45 minutes. We've been talking about an hour and a half. Yeah. And, you know, that doesn't even really scratch the surface because it's just the two of us going, and sometimes there's overlap in our interest in something that's going on, and so, you know, there's still a lot of other things. Go to their website, 221bcon.com.
Mm-hmm.
They will have a link in the show notes and on the Facebook posting when this goes live tomorrow. And then, you know, you can actually look at the programming on their website.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, pre-reg. They have eternal memberships. I believe they're $300, $350.
Yeah.
$350 is the Diogenes Club. You get a lot of perks. I highly recommend doing that.
Mm-hmm.
This is just such a great show, and
it really is.
Extremely lucky to
keep on getting invited back.
The opportunity to cover it for our podcast. Yeah. So,
and the big thing too is like, you can do the panels and stuff like that. There are so many other things that are going on as well.
Yeah.
Like what you were talking about with the room where, I forget what was the
activities.
Yeah. The activity
and photos
rooms
and stuff like that.
There's so much. So like if panels aren't your big thing, there's still a lot of things to do here.
Yeah.
And just
you can
like,
write, you can hang out with people with similar interests. You can go to a dance party, do karaoke.
Yeah, it's just so much fun, and the people are so awesome here. I just feel like it's family. I never felt weird or insecure walking up and talking to somebody.
Yes, and it's a very friendly convention. Yeah. There was never, like you said, any shutdown or, like, leave me alone type interaction. It was
very friendly.
I would
say sometimes, like, at Dragon Con, sometimes when you try to talk to people, like, people will just kind of brush you off or you feel weird or things along those lines. I just felt like everybody was so open and friendly.
Yeah.
And
accepting.
Yeah. And they even, you know, people who were sitting by themselves, a lot of people would come up and just, like, start talking to that person. Yeah. So, again, I think what makes this con so awesome is the panels, the information, the things that you can do. But really, it's a lot about the people, too. Like, the people make it awesome. And it's the people on the panels, it's the attendees. And I just can't say enough, like, how good it was talking with people and interacting with folks.
Yeah. So, this was another successful year.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go back next year in 2020 and further on down the road. If it's happening, I'm there.
Exactly.
I give it 2 gigantic thumbs up.
I give it 2 gigantic thumbs up as well.
Awesome. So with that, you can reach us through Facebook at Back Row Super Show, 4 separate words, or you can send us a comment, send us an email, what have you, at backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
And you can see what's happening with the podcast.
Yeah.
We might be doing a nerd fight or
talking about a game we're working on.
Yeah. So check us out.
Yeah. And definitely check out 221BCon.
Yeah. Again, you can go to their website, which is
221BCon.com.
Yep. And you can see exactly what's going on. And
we'll see you guys there next year.
Yeah. See you guys there.
All right. Bye.
Bye.